very own Reverend Heather Dawn Clark.
Thank you. Thank you, Carrie. It was beautiful. It's good to see you again. My talk this morning is The Metaphysics of Terror, and you might wonder, as I did, what on earth that subject has to do with Peace is the Way. It's one of the chapters that Deepak Chopra has in his book, Peace is the Way. And first of all, we should understand what the word metaphysics really means. You know that means beyond the physical. But if you look at it, what it really means is the study of being, the study of being. And so since terror is just fear on steroids, it's just extreme terror. You look in the dictionary, what is the meaning of terror? Extreme fear, extreme fear. So fear on steroids, and we know fear is a no thing. So how could it have a being? It cannot have a being. It is a no thing. Fear is simply a lack of awareness of oneness. A lack of awareness of love, a lack of awareness of God's presence. So I'll share with you what Deepak had to say because it was pretty interesting. He talked about who becomes terrorists. And you know, you and I, we've all said the same thing. Monsters are terrorists. Monsters are terrorists. And he talks because currently the involvement that we have is with terrorists, he only talks briefly about current terror. And that was a very smart thing to do because we can't look objectively at something that we're currently in. It's hard to see the truth when we are experiencing that fear ourselves, that huge fear. He does mention that Osama bin Laden's right-hand person was a surgeon. He was an educated person. He was not someone that he was probably the leader, didn't fall in. So he looked back at some of the other issues in history, which if you just think of it, when we were in China several years ago, our tour guide was fabulous. He was this young 30-something, 20-something guy, and he was very knowledgeable, very gregarious, and he said, to my dad, Chairman Mao was like a god. And we just said, really, really? That's an interesting point of view, because to the Western world, certainly that revolution wasn't peaceful. It wasn't great. And he said, but to me, just a good man. So when we were going through China, we came to in Beijing and in the north of China, where we saw the pandas, all of those places, there was no sort of pushback to communism until we got into South China, and our local tour guide said he always wanted to go to university and be a doctor, like his father was a doctor. But in the revolution, his father's credentials got stripped away from him, and they put a technician in as a doctor. They didn't put an education person in as a doctor, which kind of seems weird to me, that it wouldn't be someone who could do that work, who had trained to do that work. But not only that, they took all beauty away. It was in the beginning of the revolution, only the working person had any value. So if you didn't have a job that was work, you weren't valued. If it wasn't like a blue-collar job, if it was an educator or a doctor, or worse yet, a poet or a painter, you had no freedom at all. So we look at that and we think, but the ideology was that this would be a better world. That this would be a better world. And that is one of the things that Chopra points out, that with every group of terrorists ever, whether it was in these Russian Revolution, Chinese Revolution, currently today, or the Holocaust in World War II, that it was the same thing, that there was an ideal that the rest of the world didn't agree with. But those that were on board, the reason that they could go forward and commit such atrocities was, to them, it wasn't an atrocity. He gives an example of Adolf Eichmann. You remember him. In the 60s, he was captured. He was Himmler's right-hand man. He was captured. He was in South America in the early 60s. He was captured and put on trial. And during that whole trial, Chopra said this was not a monster. This was just an ordinary guy who early on lost his job and felt that he was entitled to have work. So for him, the ideology of cleansing Germany and having a master race was a good ideal. Now for us, you're probably sitting there like me thinking, how could that be an ideal? And yet it was his ideal, and even when he was on trial, he never apologized. He never said, please forgive me for these atrocities. In his mind, it was not an atrocity. He was doing good. So that's part of the metaphysics of terror, is the terrorist assumes that there's good, thinks that there's good in what they're doing, and thinks that it's okay for them to do these things because it shows a new way. Both China, Russia, in the fundamentalism in Islam and the fundamentalism in Christianity that created the Ku Klux Klan, it's been everywhere. It's not just in one group of people. But in everyone, there was a sense of these ideals are worthy of the greater good. They're going to create the greater good, so it doesn't matter what we do to get there. Well, that's sure something to learn, isn't it? Because perhaps it does matter how we get somewhere. In fact, I would say it does matter how we get somewhere. Because, and one of the reasons I love to read The Flames of Faith at the end of the meditation is it reminds us that this isn't the only path. This is one of the paths. This is the path that I've chosen and most of you have chosen. This is our way. But we don't make other people wrong for having another way. Their ways are right for them. So that's one of the things. Another thing that he quotes, and you may or may not be familiar with this, I'm pretty sure Reverend Bruce has talked about this before. It was an experiment done in the 50s at Yale University, but it wasn't just university students. It was a psychology professor was testing, and he got volunteers to do the testing. And they were supposed to be the teacher. There was a technician there watching. The technician had a lab coat on. And then through a glass, they could see the students. And the students were hooked up to wires. And if they made a mistake, they were instructed, the teachers were instructed to jolt the students with electricity. And if they got another one wrong, to increase the voltage. Up to twice the voltage in a regular current at home. What he told the subjects was he was testing to see what pain or punishment had to do with learning. But what he was actually testing was how much will people obey authority. What will they do beyond what their morals are? And it was a disturbing result. 65% of the test subjects increased that voltage to maximum. 65%! They didn't question, and even though the subjects weren't really subjects, they were actors, and the actors were crying, they were weeping, they were pleading, please don't do this. They were undeterred. They continued the tests. The only thing that made a difference was if the person in the lab coat went out of the room, They were kinder. And what they decided that meant was that lab-coated person, another actor, symbolized authority. He was the one that gave the directions. He was the one that said, increase the voltage. But these were just normal people. These weren't bad people. These were not monstrous people. These were just people attempting to follow orders, attempting to do what they were asked to do. Now, the other thing that made a difference was when that subject came in to sit across the table from them, they couldn't do it. They couldn't increase that voltage. They couldn't make that person be in pain. Of course, there was no voltage. Of course, it was all made up. They were actors. But that is a really important thing for us to remember. Right now in our Exploring Roots class, we're doing the Emerson essay, Self-Reliance. And that essay is really about, to thine own self be true. It's remember who you are, that you have choice always, and you can decide not to go along with what you're told to do. I'm actually surprised it's in America, because Americans, by far, to me, are far more likely to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to do that. As a Canadian, that's what I see. My filter says all of the people born here in the United States are much more likely to be independent thinkers. So I was really disappointed to hear this study was 65% went along with something that was horrendous. Horrendous. Now, how many of you think you need to be in pain to learn? The thesis itself, the theory itself is wrong right up front. You know that isn't how people learn. They don't learn when they're afraid. We intuitively know this. And yet, they went along with it. He then quotes something more recent, because just in case we think, well, that's all those people in the East, then he quotes something that Stanford University did in the 60s. And this experiment was going to take a whole term. They divided in the class into guards and prisoners. And within a week, they had to call it off because the guards became so mean, so horrifying, that they were doing the things, when we read about Abu Ghraib, those were the things they were doing to their classmates in a role play situation. How easy it is for us to forget who we are and that we have power of choice, that we can choose. But that professor said that experiment, it's over, and went on to something else. So let me just look at I think I've told most of those things. It's on this side. Okay. So, to go from normal to monster, there are 7 things required. 1, give him permission to disregard morality. Give him permission to disregard morality. Her. 2, put an authority close by to reinforce the cruelty, making it a duty. 3, arrange a hierarchy so that the lower ranks must obey the higher ranks. 4, create an atmosphere of fear. 5, apply group pressure by showing that everyone else is going along. 6, release the evil deed from any threat of being punished. And 7, do everything behind closed doors. So, if that were the end of my talk, that would be very disturbing. But the metaphysics of terror has to be that there is an antidote. There has to be something instead of terror, right? There has to be something that we can choose. And Chopra is very clear, and so is Holmes, the thing we choose is love. The thing we choose is love, that love is the healer, and that when we, and that's why in the experiment, once they were across the table from each other and they saw this other human being, they could no longer inflict that pain. They could no longer inflict it. Something else I was going to... Ernest says, just so far as we depend upon any condition, past or present or future, we are creating chaos. Just so far as we depend upon any condition, past, present, or future, we are creating chaos because we are then dealing with conditions or effects and not with causes. We're dealing with conditions and not causes. So Chopra says that the real enemy of peace isn't evil, it's chaos. That's why I read you this Holmes quote. It's not evil, it's chaos. And there's a wonderful Chinese proverb, and I have both versions, and I actually wrote a treatment, affirmative prayer for you. It's on the table that the box is on. I didn't copy enough for everybody, but I can make more if we run out. And it begins with this Chinese proverb that I like very much. And I know someone set this to music, and I've forgotten who it is. But anyway, if there's light in the soul, there'll be beauty in the person. If there's beauty in the person, there is harmony within the home. If there's harmony within the home, there's order in the nation. If there's order in the nations, there is peace in the world. So from chaos, we go into order. And he and I and Ernest and all of us believe one thing. The only thing that changes anything is consciousness. What changes us from fear to freedom is an awareness of who we are, of choosing thoughts that uphold us, that deliver us from evil or from mistakes, etc. Okay, now, he has 9 ideas. I'm going to quickly go over them. Okay, so the conditions to turn consciousness toward love are, 1, giving and receiving love. Pretty easy, giving and receiving love. So be in that habit, whether with friends or with loved ones, with family, give and receive love. And 2, so that's something that you do out here, 2, sitting in your own silence. So the power of meditation, of silence, of stillness, helps us to create a consciousness of love. 3, this is something we can do so easily here, immersing yourself in natural beauty. Immersing yourself in natural beauty. 4, making art and appreciating art in all its forms. I know some of you are very... crafty, and I don't mean like you're smart, crafty, although you're smart too. I mean that you really like to do things, to make things, to create something new out of known things. That's what creativity is. 5, telling the truth, whatever the consequences. Telling the truth, whatever the consequences, takes great courage, but it moves you toward love. 6, laughing, dancing, playing with a child. So, how many of you are with small children? I know some of you are. And how much fun that is to play and dance and be with those children. 7, having any outlet for play. Some of us are so immersed in work, we forget that there are other things that we can do. Play, any outlet for joy. Acting out of kindness and compassion. Acting out of kindness and compassion. It's a choice. And then bonding, feeling at one with a group whose goals are positive. And lastly, offering yourself in service. Those who have learned to serve know the joy of being in service. So there's a Hindu story I'd like to share with you. It's a story about... 2 kingdoms, and both of them were devoted to Krishna. One was ruled by a king who was very cruel and very mean and very greedy. and the other ones ruled by a woman who was very kind and very compassionate and caring. So Krishna came down to earth and he said to the king, thank you for dedicating your whole kingdom to my service. And the king bowed and said, what can I do for you? He said, go throughout your kingdom and find one person who is truly good, who is truly good. So the king went all throughout his kingdom and he came back to Krishna and said, I'm so sorry, my lord. I found some people who do some good things, but they do them for selfish purposes. I'm sorry, I could not find any one good person. So Krishna left him and he went to the woman and he said, I know that you're kind and compassionate. I want you to find one truly evil person in your kingdom. And so she searched and searched and searched and she came back and she said, Lord Krishna, I looked so hard. I tried to do what you asked me to, but I couldn't find one person was truly evil. There are many that were unskillful, many that had made mistakes and done things that they regretted, but truly their hearts were pure. Their hearts were pure and they were good people. See, we can only see from who we are. What we see out here comes from who we are in here. So the king that was cruel and evil and greedy himself could only see more cruelty, more evil, more of what he was. Whereas the queen, who only saw good, who was compassionate and kind to everyone, only saw good. Even when she looked for that truly evil person. So, I've given you 10 things to do. 10. So, 10 things that you could do. Choose one of them. Choose one of them this week and be this being. The thing is that terror truly doesn't have any metaphysics to it. These were the ways people become terrorists. The truth is, terror is just fear. And fear is simply a lack of awareness of the oneness of all life, a lack of awareness of God's presence. So whenever you feel fear, ask yourself, in this moment, what do I really believe? What do I really believe right now? Do I believe that all life is connected and I'm essential to its expression? Do I believe that the universe is friendly and that everything is here for my support? Or do I believe that I'm the victim of circumstance? Truly, no victims. There is not one of us that was born to be a victim. We're born to be glorious expressions of peace. So, some of you my age and older, younger, know who the Eagles are. Oh, good. Okay, well, the Eagles have a song called I Wish You Peace. And it's one of my favorite songs. It's not one of their best known, but it's one of my favorite ones. And the lyrics, let me just read you some of the lyrics. I wish you peace when the cold winds blow, warmed by the fire's glow. I wish you comfort in the lonely time and arms to hold you when you ache inside. I wish you hope when things are going bad, kind words when times are sad. I wish you shelter from the raging wind, cooling waters at the fever's end. I wish you peace when times are hard, a light to guide you through the dark. And when storms are high and your dreams are low, I wish you strength to let love grow on. I wish you strength to let love flow. So that is my wish for all of us, including myself, that we reach out, to reach in to that place in us that knows it's safe, knows it's whole, knows it's harmony, beauty, truth. And let whatever's going on be what's going on. Choose for ourselves peace. Choose for ourselves not to get swept up in my way is the only way. Not to get swept up in listening to some authority tell us this is the way to do it. But to be true to the sacred self within us and live that peace. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Diane's going to now help us get quiet, and I'm going to then pray us into peace, and it may or may not be like the prayer that's on the table.
I am opening to
breathe deeply into that awareness of opening to God's love. Let it be every cell of your being. I speak this word for each one here and everyone listening or watching, and this is what I know. I know that there is only one presence, one power, and that one that I call God is infinite peace. It is infinite, unconditioned, and unconditional love. It is the thing itself that is everywhere present. And it is right where I am. It is in me, through me, and as me. In and through and as each one here. I speak this word for love, for peace, for a new awareness of the power of choice, a new awareness of the presence of God's good in my life. I speak this word knowing that there is no truth to fear. In God's love, fear disappears, it evaporates, it's gone. And what is left is a sense of well-being, of oneness, of unity and wholeness. I know that this is absolutely the truth for each one here. I know that this is the moment that each one of us moves forward in peace, in great joy, and great love, with the awareness of God's grace. I know that each one makes God's grace welcome, says yes to peace, says yes to love, says yes to creativity and joy. And I know that this goodness is God, and I give great thanks it's so. And please help me anchor this by saying, and so it is.